It is Locked On Jazz for the 26th of February. The playoff picture update. Aha moment from Rick Carlisle that maybe explains the Ricky Rubio turnovers. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. I am working on a brand new computer today. I got a brand new ThinkPad X1 from Lenovo. It is incredible, but it also means that everything is being transferred, and the old video audio editing program that I used to work doesn't work anymore, so I'm trying a new one, and all sorts of fun little things. That's why there was no open today. I can't figure out how to mix on the program I'm using right now. The other program I went to download and paid a bunch of money for doesn't save MP3s. That's been the only struggle. Otherwise, this thing is incredible. I'm so fired up. Thanks to Zach Lambert, former Utah Jazz broadcast assistant and Jazz PR guy, who now is a big wig over at Lenovo. I don't know if he's that big. You know, he's just a rising star, shall we call him? Another one representing Utah well. So who helped us out? All right. Nonetheless, if you're new to the show, I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, super geeky numbers to look at. We open every show this time of year. By the way, you can get it on us, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and you can tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz. When you get in the car, tell your smart device, say the keyword, whether it's Siri or OK Google or whatever it is, play podcast Locked On Jazz. So we open every show this time of year with a quick update on our playoff push and playoff predictions, and let's see what happened last night. And then Rick Carlisle made a comment that it's not that everyone has shooters on the floor, it's that everyone has shooters and drivers on the floor now. And it dawned on me that that was a really interesting thought. It also then dawned on me that, wow, we have two guys that aren't drivers and aren't shooters. And then, frankly, Dante and Ricky are kind of close to being classified as non-shooters also. It's pretty incredible. You know, we're obviously a defensive team. We're made to be great defensively. That's how we're built. But pretty incredible that we actually get as much done offensively. And I'll dig into whether anyone else is doing anything similar to us. And then how accurate was Rick Carlisle about no shoot guys are all shooters or drivers? And that's the plan today. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai and Slow the Flow. All right, last night, ball games took place last night on the 25th. Portland continues to win on that road trip. They had a 78% win probability. They beat Cleveland exactly like they're supposed to. Houston had a 93% win probability, beat Atlanta just like they were supposed to. So we're beginning to see, you know, things take shape early on. Certain wins, which are 80 to 100% wins, were the combo's 3-1. Oklahoma City's loss after double overtime is the only one. Sort of should wins, which is 60 to 80%, are now right kind of where they'll end up being about 70%+. Teams are 4-2 in those. Pick'ems, after San Antonio lost to New Jersey or to Brooklyn last night, a 40 win percentile chance they lost it on a back end of a back-to-back, are now 2-3. And that one actually usually stays fairly right on about 50%. Clippers had a 61 win percent against Dallas last night. They won. The Kings had a 24% win probability against Minnesota. They lost. That's one of their 17 games that they play with a 40% or less win probability. Whether they can pull those off will be the story. They're 1-2 in those so far. And then the Lakers losing to Memphis last night, which everyone's calling a stunner, but interestingly, 538 only had as a 43% win probability. But the whole reason why we had the Lakers knocking on the door for the playoffs was because of the fact that we thought they were under projected in their 8 pick'em games and their eight should-win games and would overperform in those. Right now, they're 0-2 in their eight pick'em games. They are 1-0 in their unlikelies. So an interesting stretch coming up for them. They play the Pelicans, the Bucks, and the Suns here before the Clippers and the Nuggets, and then they have the Celtics again. So, I mean, they could very easily lose four of their next six, and you can feel the pressure amping up on the Clippers and how they feel, or excuse me, on the Lakers right now. What we still don't know is kind of where the Clippers are. They got the win last night. We'll see them here tomorrow in Salt Lake City. But where are the Clippers in this kind of quest for a playoff spot? And then can Sacramento, with their schedule, actually overcome what they have? All right, so that's where we are in the playoff push. Nothing too dramatic last night. San Antonio's losing three in a row, and the Lakers lost last night. You know, I think it's clear that the Jazz are not falling below six. I'm just not sure it's clear the Jazz are getting above six. So the 1-2 seed seems unlikely. And then there'll be some debate, I'm sure. Would you rather be six, play Oklahoma City, and then if you win, you play Denver, or whoever wins that series between Denver and San Antonio or L.A., or I guess it could be Sacramento, either L.A., then being 4-5 playing Houston or Portland and having to play Golden State in the second round. And that, I mean, there's a legitimate discussion there that you might, if you're not going to be four, you might as well be six. I don't really want to play Oklahoma City again in the playoffs, though beating them twice in a row would be so beep and sweet. It'd be incredible. All right, I want to kind of walk through what Rick Carlisle had to say, and then we'll dig into it here in a second. If we have time, we'll do Time Machine Tuesday. So Rick Carlisle's point in the press conference the other day was that it's not so much that everyone spread the floor so much. And the question I asked Rick, actually, Rick was kind of known for the most window dressing to his offensive plays. In other words, Rick has the ability to kind of run a bunch of action that gets into the same set all the time. That was kind of his signature. He was one of the first guys to do it. We do a lot of that. If you kind of watch our plays, we actually often end up in the same place. We've done a ton of things before we get there to get to the same place. And with the amount of switching that's going on defensively and the way the team is playing with pace, some of that window dressing has disappeared from the league. So I was asking Rick about that. And Rick's answer was, first of all, people aren't switching as much as you thought. As you think, which I thought was really interesting. The second thing Rick talked about was, it's not that everyone has shooters now. It's that everyone has drivers and shooters. And if you think about the Ryan Anderson and some of these other guys that used to just sit out and shoot threes, they're kind of done. The standstill three-point shooter that if you close out on him, can't do anything with the ball, really doesn't exist that much. So just the pure shooter, Bielitz is a little bit that way in Sacramento, but he's actually got a half-decent dribble drive game. He's out of the rotation there. But you just don't have a lot of guys anymore that are either non-drivers or non-shooters. Now, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30 of them left in the NBA. There are 30 players left in the NBA that could be classified as a non-driver and a non-shooter. Kayvon Looney, Jared Allen, Ed Davis, Cody Zettler. I think Wendell Carter Jr., if you're Chicago, you have to be a little careful about that with Robin Lopez, DeAndre Jordan, Andre Drummond. Actually, Stanley Johnson is pretty close to that. Zaza Pachulia, Clint Capella, Kenneth Faried, Montrezl Harrell, JaVale McGee, Zubac, Valanciunas, Hassan Whiteside, Bam Adebayo, Taj Gibson, Jahlil Okafor, Enes Kanter, Steven Adams, Nerlens Noel, Patrick Patterson's getting close. Orlando's got a really interesting situation because they have two of them in Jonathan Isaac and Mo Bamba. Neither can shoot, neither can drive right now. DeAndre Ayton, Yusuf Nurkic. Evan Turner's awfully close to a non-shooter, but he can drive a little bit. He's definitely a non-shooter. Willie Cauley-Stein, Pau Gasol, Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert. I defined the league average for a half-court possession is 94.8. So if you can shoot a three at 31 or 32%, that possession is a league average half-court possession. That's the way I looked at it. So that's interesting. There really are only 30 players left in the league that would be non-drivers, non-shooters. Now, we're playing two of them together, which is anyone else doing this? What's the offensive impact when you put two of them together? And what's the impact on the turnovers? Because that's been so much of the conversation this week. Let's touch on all of those things when we continue. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. It's really been one of the great part of my life, actually. I don't want to overplay it too crazily, but really, it's been a great part of my life is that I got to know the Murdoch family. They opened my eyes to the Hyundai brand, which I really didn't know an awful lot about at all. And now I am able to own, we own one. My son just left to go to a ski race in his Murdoch Santa Fe. I'm driving the newest version of Santa Fe. It's really incredible how much the technology they have put into these things. I just didn't know that Hyundai was one, features-laden, two, on the technological cutting edge of things the way they are. That, to me, was eye-opening. It led us to buying a new car. I've enjoyed getting to know the Murdoch family a great deal. Call Blake a friend at this point and really enjoy it. Check it out. If you are searching for a car, stop by the showroom and at least give Murdoch a chance. Then you'll find out about the Murdoch Guarantee and the Murdoch No Regrets Policy, and I think you'll be really pleased that you took the effort, took the time to go experience what the Murdochs are all about, because this is a great Utah family who's taking the time to make sure that you get a super experience. They do it with their No Regrets Policy, plus you get 5-day exchange policy and car washes for life. Visit MurdochHyundai.com. Check out the Kona, by the way. It's only $259 a month right now. That's $259 a month for the Kona. Today's show is also brought to you by Slow the Flow. All right, do we have any more Slow the Flow stories? Jacob Morgan sent a little note into me. He says, I'm so happy that you're promoting Slow the Flow. I'm part of an environmental generation that develops smarter and more efficient infrastructure by crafting new solutions, tools designed to make energy efficient, renewable energy. I've been working in solar and renewable energy for the past couple of years, focusing on water saving. It's not just slowing the flow, but also having smart devices that use your water efficiency. This is so cool. He then linked to me. I don't think he makes money off this. If he does, he suckered me. That Rainbird has a product, Rainbird, like that does your sprinkler system, has a product that can check the moisture in the soil, and it signals to your system whether to run or not. Right? There's nothing more annoying than when you drive down the street and someone's got their whole sprinkler system going, it just rained all night. Like that. Come on, that's ridiculous. So that's a great one. Thank you very much to Jacob Morgan for sharing that Rainbird product. I think it's called the Smart Soil Moisture. Feel free to share with me your Slow the Flow stories and let us know about how you are slowing the flow as well. There's so many things that we can do to help the environment and slow the flow. You can check them all out at slowtheflow.org. Become a WER All-Star, your water efficiency All-Star. Here, a simple one. With a 5-minute shower, you use 12 to 25 gallons. A tub is 70, so shower instead of tub. And then if you can cut, you know, a minute off your shower every day, that's 5 gallons. Slowtheflow.org. All right, so we ran through that there's 30 players in the league. Here's the players that have actually played together. Now, I'm being Wendell Carter Jr. and Robin Lopez are on the same team in Chicago. They've played 4 possessions all year together. So they have not played a no driver, no shooter. Detroit, I'm calling Stanley Johnson definitely a no-shooter, and he can't handle, so I'm calling him a no-driver. He's been traded. They played 932 possessions together. They had an offensive rating of 99.1. It was in the second percentile of all offenses. So pretty much the worst offensive combination in the league. Lakers have two, or had two, in McGee and Zubac. They never played together. Houston has two in Capella and Fareed. They never play together. Miami has two in Hassan Whiteside and Bam Adebayo. They've played 28 possessions together. They have an offensive rating of 82 because it doesn't work. Oklahoma City has two in Adams and Noel. They don't play together. Orlando has Jonathan Isaac and Mo Bamba, two young kids right now. Neither can drive, neither can shoot. 435 possessions they've played together. Offensive rating of a 93.1. They are in the zero percentile. That is the worst offense in the league. The Suns have eight, and the only other team with two is the Jazz, with Favors and Gobert. They've played 1,200 possessions together. The offense is a 104.5 and in the 15th percentile offensively. So noticeably better than the other two, but only one of three teams in the NBA that has played more than 100 possessions with two non-drivers, non-shooters on the floor at the same time. We've figured out a way to at least make it somewhat playable offensively at the 15th percentile. And, of course, the key there is that the defense is great, right? The defense is in the 97th percentile, and the lineup is positive. It's plus 2.9. So we have found a way to make this work, become our signature. We're the best defensive rebounding team in the league when they're on the floor together. We don't foul at all. Our shooting defense is actually only okay, but overall our defense is amazing. And frankly, when Rubio's not on the floor and Royce is on the floor in the 140 possessions, that lineup is actually even better, maybe just because Ricky's not a great shooter. What's interesting about the Jazz is, so I think it's fair to say, again, we're just focusing offensively. It works defensively. The Jazz play the single most clogged floor of any team in the league. Right? Like, that's pretty undeniable. We play the least space of anyone in the league when we're playing those two together. When we have Favors and Gobert on the floor together, we turn it over 16% of the time, which is in the 10th percentile. When we have Favors on the floor, a little bit more versatile offensive player than Rudy, and Rudy's off the floor, we turn the ball over 15.5%. So still a decent amount, but lower. And we flip it around, and you put Favors off the floor and put Gobert on the floor. So now you're only playing, again, with one of the bigs, and our turnover rate drops to 14.6 with just Gobert, and is now, again, not great, but is at least, you know, in the realm of average. Just to give you context on this, the league average turning it over is 13, according to Cleaning the Glass, is 13.8%. The worst in the league is Atlanta. They're really out of the match. The worst in the, if you take Atlanta, they're an outlier. They're 2 percentage points worse than anyone else. It's Phoenix at 15.6. So when we have both bigs on the floor, we're turning it over 16.1% of the time, which is a higher rate than Phoenix, who's 29th in the league. With just Favors, we stay right around that lower level. And with just Gobert, we move up to 14.6, which puts us at about 20th in the league. So never are we great at any of this, but it does show a little bit what the impact is. Now, Ricky, who gets the brunt of the fans' criticism for his turnovers, and when there's eight of them, it's a big number in the box score, so it's really obvious – But it's interesting to look at Ricky. His turnover percentage when he's playing with both bigs is 14.9%. Pretty high. And we talked about just a minute ago, when both those guys are on the floor together, the Jazz scuffle offensively. And it's, you know, it's not an easy floor to play for everybody. That's, I think, you know, and if we kind of looked at the traditional numbers for a second, when Rubio is playing and they're all three of them are on the floor together, Rubio shoots 39% from the field, 33% from three. And he plays about 9 minutes, turns it over once in those 9 minutes. When he plays with just Favors, which is 5 minutes a night, Ricky shoots about 3 percentage points better from the field, a little less good from three, about the same. Turns it over at about the same rate, which we just talked about. The team kind of is similar. And if we flip and have, you know, what's interesting is that it feels as though Ricky and Rudy don't have a great connection. When you watch them, I mean, Ricky is just not good at that lob pass so far. So if you look at that, and you now fiddle through to when Ricky plays with just Rudy and look at those numbers, the turnover rate as the team, as we just talked about, goes way down. Ricky's feels like it should go up in that process. But when Ricky's on the floor overall, just playing with him, he shoots 43% from the field, 33% from three, turns it over about the same rate, maybe a little higher, as we were talking about. Here's the Ricky's turnover rate. When he's on the floor with both bigs, it's 14.9. When he's on the floor with Gobert, it's 13.8. So it's close. It's down a little bit. When he's on the floor with just Favors, better hands, 11.8. So some of the turnover issue is related to the fact that we play the most crowded floor. Now, it works, right? It's plus 2.8. It's who we are. We're just unique. You just have to understand that sometimes in this league, when we're analyzing who the Jazz are, what they're doing offensively, what they're doing, we're unique. No one else is playing a starting lineup with this little space. Nobody else is playing a starting lineup with nobody else. There's only two other lineups in the NBA that have played over 400 possessions that have two non-drivers, non-shooters. They're not 97th percentile defensively. Right? That's the key to the whole thing, is that Favors and Gobert are so great defensively that that lineup is positive and it works. But when we then isolate singular issues and criticize someone or the team about things, we have to make sure that we're not ignoring the bubble, not isolating so much that we're ignoring the actual context of what's happening, is my point. This is not a commentary that this is right or wrong. This is just who we are. It works. It's plus 2.9 per 100 possessions. It's different. It leads to other things. By the way, Donovan, Royce O'Neal, Joe Ingles, Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert lineup, so without Rubio, turns it over 20% of the time. So when you put no point guard in with Favors and Gobert, that group's turning it over 20% of the time in 140 possessions. The offense is a little better overall. The defense continues to be excellent. I don't know. Thought it was worthwhile. Time Machine Tuesday when we continue on Locked on Jazz. Make sure when you get in your car, you tell your smart device, play podcast Locked on Jazz. All right, Time Machine Tuesday. We go back into the archives of the years gone by and find a year. I have a little hat over here. It has all the fun little kind of years in it. Let's go grab it. 1994-95, it says. I think that's the first year we ever won 60. It is. We won 60 games and then lost in the first round of the playoffs to the Houston Rockets. Ah, it still breaks my heart. That series is such a killer. 94-95. Jordan's out of the league. We win 60. And the all right, let's get over it. Get over it, David. Get over it. All right, let's go to February 26th and see what we were doing. We played the Denver Nuggets and smashed them. 110-96 in Denver. The mailman delivered 34 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals. Stockton had 20 points and 8 assists. Hornacek had 6 assists. David Benoit excuse me, I just saw something that just completely stunned me. David Benoit had 11 points. I would give Jazz tickets to anyone who could tell me the starting center on the Jazz that game, but I promise you can't, and you'll never get. You can guess right now. February 22nd, 26th, 1995. There's no way in this day and age of the internet for me to do a legitimate contest here where I don't know if you looked it up or anything like that, so I shouldn't have said that, but I just am certain. All right, who? Anybody? Anybody? Any guesses? Anyone? James Donaldson. What? Who's James Donaldson? I never knew he played for the Jazz. Right. I think that's the year Felton Spencer tore his Achilles tendon. Blue Edwards, Adam Keefe, Tom Chambers, Antoine Carr, and John Crotty all came off the bench. Denver had a pretty decent team that year, but they were 23-31 by the time we smashed them here. Jalen Rose and Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf for the backcourt. Reggie Williams, Jalen Rose, and Dikembe Mutombo with Dale Ellis, Bryant Stith, Tom Hammonds, Bison Daley, and Cliff Levingston coming off the bench. I always love it when I hear the old guys talk about the talent today is so much less good than what it once was. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, Jalen Rose, Reggie Williams, Rodney Rogers, and Dikembe Mutombo were a starting five in the NBA of a mid-level team. Right? Come on. By the way, that win against Denver sparked the Jazz on a here on February 26th onto what turned out to be a 9-game win streak. They would not lose another game until March 16th would be the next loss when they lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers in Cleveland. The Jazz then would close the year on a 7-game win streak to go to 60-22 before losing to Houston in that 5-game series, that crushing game 5, 95-91, May 7th of 95. That was the Rockets, Kenny Smith, Clyde Drexler, Pete Chilcutt, Robert Horry and Hakeem Olajuwon. The Jazz and the Rockets in that game 5, both teams took 21 threes. David Benoit, my memory, went 2 of 8, but boy, no one ever talks about John Stockton's 4 of 14 that night or 1 of 6. I don't remember that. I remember Benoit missing threes, though. I can't ever forget it. And yet, I don't think we ever talk about I didn't know Stockton was 1 of 6 that night. And Malone played 45 minutes a lot. Drexler played 47. Olajuwon played 44. No one was kidding around then. Jazz were up. I remember this so vividly. I was working in Salt Lake at the time. Jazz were up, I think, 7 going to the fourth and got outscored by 11 in the fourth quarter. They scored probably about 16, 17 points in that fourth quarter. Actually, I guess I could look at it. They scored 20 points in that fourth quarter. They outscored 31-20. Ugh. Just a crushing, crushing loss. Mailman had 35, 10, 3, and 2 that night. I don't remember. The fourth quarter just did not go the Jazz way. That one, Steve Javy, Hugh Hollins, Hugh Evans were the officials. That was a killer. That might be the worst loss in franchise history. I know everybody would probably say an NBA Finals loss, but, I mean, that we were 60-22 that year, second in the West. Midwest Division, that was our year to go places. End up being, I think that's the Houston-Orlando final. You win that series, you go, I mean, that's the year you win it. You're not beating Michael. Lakers had beat the Supersonics. Suns were beat the Blazers, and the Spurs swept the Nuggets that year. And then The Eastern Conference, the Western Conference Finals was the Rockets versus the Spurs. I mean, we would have had to beat the Spurs. What a bummer. Sorry, that's totally downer. Didn't mean it that way. Jeff Hornacek had an incredible playoff series. Shot 51% from the field, 54% from three. Benoit actually had a pretty good series. He shot 44% from three on 11 of 25 over a five-game stretch. A little bit of a different world. Mailman averaged 30 and 13 in that series. Olajuwon, 35-9-4 with three blocks. Maybe he was just better than everyone else. All right, that is Time Machine Tuesday. Sorry for the bummer there. Have a great day. Locked On NBA's got a good one today, so tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On NBA. Talk to you soon. Thanks a lot for tuning in.